It's Booyah without the B.
Booyah without the B. Oh, yeah.
Booyah.
Okay. Yo!
Oh, Sean, I'm tired today.
Oh, what's wrong?
Oh, I nothing's wrong. I was just up really late last night.
Oh yeah, me too.
Yep. Oh, I feel like I have two jobs sometimes.
Oh yeah, me too. I feel like I have three jobs.
So what kept you up late last night?
Well, I was actually pulling together some picture assets for our new Famicom Dojo episode coming up this week. Actually, by the time this podcast comes out, it will have been up, and we will link to it, and you can watch it.
Oh, wow. What a coincidence, because the thing that kept me up till the early hours of this morning was also putting together a Famicom Dojo video.
Ooh.
Yep, that's right. Vink's actually doing some of the editing now. finally making use of that major that he has in video production. I always thought that was weird about the show. Like, I'm the one who studied video production, but you direct most of the videos.
Yeah, how did that happen? I'm not even really sure.
It's just because when I left for Japan, I just basically brought a laptop with me. I don't have the equipment.
Right. Yeah, and I've been, you know, there's like a whole video editing station. If anyone's been watching the Powat Game News shows, I always have something up on the computer with the two screens on it. It's like the video I'm editing most recently, and I actually got to see a bit of the new Neo Geo video in the background there.
Yeah.
Plus, well, the Ninja Turtles one was in there previously, I think, too. From May or no, maybe it was back in January. But yeah, so always look for little clues there. If you're not watching the Powat Game News, why not? You should watch those. They're fun.
They are. Those are really great. But I think the main reason why you do most of the editing is because you made a fatal mistake during the early days of Famicom Dojo.
Oh dear, what's that?
You did a competent job. Like if the first few videos had been really, really horrible, I would have like taken the reins, but I'm like, hey, he's doing a good job.
I practiced. No, so Powat started in 2005, and I knew, you know, I've always wanted to do videos since I was a kid. Like the first video I have on YouTube is something I made when I was 10. It was a Puppy Star Trek episode that my dad and I actually put together. Like I would force him to watch these, and I think I've gone over this in like a previous podcast.
Yeah, Link did once, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's like an audio bonus, but you know, the long story short, I've been wanting to get into video editing for a long time. Didn't major in it, didn't do a lot of it before college or even during college really. So in order to like get this Powat thing going and feeling like I could really put forward a quality product, I took this footage I have from 2003 when I went to Japan for the first time and like made this 7-part story essentially of my time there, and that was before I released anything
that's
else.
That's Japan series.
Or that's Orange in Japan 2003. Yeah. And it used to be on YouTube, but I used like a Hikaru Utada song for one of them, which eventually got flagged a couple of years later. And then when I took that part down, it's like, well, what's the point? I took everything down, so I can put it up somewhere else, like in Vimeo or Blip or something maybe.
Well, you should. Yeah, if you still have the assets, you could just take that offending music out.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did. It wasn't just Takaro Itada. It was like Brilliant Green and Love Psychedelico, stuff like that. What I would do is like I would pick a song that I liked from like when I was actually there and then put like a montage of my stuff to it, because it wasn't intended to be filmed as something that was going to be presented later. It was just me with a camera, and I'm just like a huge camera whore, I guess. And I film and take pictures of it like everything I possibly can, never intending to use it beyond my own personal use, mind you. But then it's like, well, I have all these assets I can pull together into something that someone would want to watch. And you know, at the time it went up before I did any Powat work, it was the most popular stuff I had on my channel. And it was a lot of fun to do, and I cut my teeth on that. And so by the time Famicom Dojo came around, like a year later, I was ready to go, essentially.
What did I do before? I mean, I did all kinds of videos in college.
Neil for Bitch. Poor Neil.
Man. All those horrible... Those horrible videos I did in college. Well, before Famicom
the
Dojo,
promo.
I worked at a television station.
I worked at TV10 in EW Eau Claire. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I put together packages, but most of those were really stupid. We did like a parody of Cribs, but it was like dorms.
Oh, wow.
And we just went into people's dorm rooms and like went, oh man, that was dumb. And then the Rocky Horror Picture Show video.
That's right. You interviewed me for that. I didn't dress up right. And was it the first time I'd seen it since, or this is the first time I'd gone to a show? I saw it before, like on television, where, like on Comedy Central, I think, where they put like all the callbacks on screen. And it was weird. So I'd never been to a live show before. And as I would learn later, it wasn't a really good example of what a live show could be like. But that's neither here nor there, I guess. But you did interview me, and I was wearing a Batman t-shirt, and that became a point of discussion.
Yeah, I think I interviewed you. I said, are you dressed up as a bat or something, or are you?
Well,
you said I'm Batman
movie.
And I refused to acknowledge it. I don't remember. I interviewed a lot of interesting people that night. But
yeah, what else did you do? You did the Dumbers Club. And
anime fan dubs. Now that's
okay. They're comedic anime fan dubs. It's like I wrote comedic Transformers fan fiction that like made fun of fan fiction, and then you wrote, and produced and starred in fan subs that made fun of fan subs.
Well, like fan dubs, but like
dubs. Yeah, sorry.
We had a very specific policy on how we'd do it. We
drunk.
We'd take an episode of an anime series, yep, and we would watch it,
right?
Like with the actual translation or with any translation, we'd turn the sound off and we watch it, and we'd talk over imagining what the characters might say. Kind of a Mystery Science Theater 3000 thing, except with no sound at all.
I don't think Pebble Chewing is cool
times
at all.
We do it a couple times until we had a script, like when the mouth moves here, this is what the voice is. But then we found out that it would have been really hard to do sound effects with that, because we're taking off the sound, the track from the show, and taking off, because we have, you know, we didn't have any equipment to just remove voices, so
right.
So we had to throw in whatever, I don't know, usually copyrighted music we could find, and then make the sound effects by doing things like pew, push, pow, explode. Oh man. Oh, that seems like a lifetime ago. I don't think I want to watch that again.
No, the Maze dub is amazing. No pun intended.
I don't think I...
Pumpkin Man!
Oh, man, that's... that part of my life died a long time ago.
That's really too bad.
But anyway, speaking of getting content the easy way, I think we've got someone who's called into our show this week.
Yeah, that's the second week in a row, like... And the both calls came in like the day the new podcast went up. So let's keep that going. Yeah, like if you feel moved to call in,
sending stuff in,
do it. Definitely. So last week was about video game videos and if they help you to decide if you want to buy games or if you just like, you know, watch them to not play them. And this is what one of our callers had to say.
Okay. Yes. Hello. This is Mo Rahman, and I. And I'd like to comment on episode 55 of Famicom Dojo Podcast Video Game Videos. Yes, I use the internet for most of my information on video games, and that's the way I find out about most games, because that's the only real relevant infrastructure, virtual infrastructure, I guess you could say, of video games. There is an arcade I could go to in Little Tokyo around where I live.
What's an arcade?
People here too.
Arcade, but, I've heard this before.
But there just isn't that much infrastructure outside of the internet. Besides conventions and arcades, what else is there besides magazines I don't read. I mean, I'd like to subscribe to Game Fan, but that's defunct.
So are a lot of magazines.
What isn't gone has gone viral, so to speak. And really, that's why I watch Let's Plays too, because, well, I don't own a lot of these games, and even though I'd like to play through, I don't want to play them through emulators. But I do use emulator, but the point is that it's like I'm sharing an experience with someone. And that's a lot of these internet review shows is how I find out about stuff relating to video games. Like, I think there's this series called 16-Bit Gems. That's where I can find out about rare and obscure SNES and Genesis games, as well as TurboGrafx 16. Or there's a show about weird video games, like what you guys talked about, the classic game room, the quote-unquote original internet video game review show, where it was literally just two guys on a desk, two guys behind a desk talking about video games and kind of bantering about it. But
that's like what we do without the desk.
What is there besides the internet, like, for people to connect to? I don't know, have you become less social now?
Could be.
In part because of
video games. That'd be ironic.
Well, yeah, that's basically my comment, so thanks for having me.
that's a great America. Comment, too.
Oh, yeah, did you hear that? He says he should come back to America.
Oh, yeah, I
can't.
Got a lot of roots here right now. But yeah, I'm planning to visit next year, though.
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
Yeah, well, we should film some Famicom Dojo things. We could get a desk.
Yeah.
That's why we haven't been getting hits.
That's what we're missing.
No desk. But no, he's totally right, though. I mean, if you took the internet out of the equation right now, the channels that existed when we were kids, you know, in the 80s and 90s don't exist anymore. I mean, I guess Nintendo Power is still around, yes?
Yeah, but like it stopped being worth reading to me like well before I dropped it in the mid-90s.
But, I mean, there's a few magazines, and most of them are controlled by stores, you know, at least here. There's a lot better options in the UK, actually. Edge magazine. Retro Gamer's like my favorite magazine, and I wish they sold it here at a reasonable price.
Oh, in Japan? Yeah, because you can get it in the US, like at Barnes & Noble or something, but you have to go to, like...
Really?
Yeah. That's how I got the copy for the one that we got interviewed in a couple years ago.
Oh.
Yes, we were in Retro Gamer magazine. They mentioned John Romero on the same page as they quoted both of us talking. Isn't that cool?
I guess.
you can also see that the cover to that magazine in our latest video.
Yes. But I mostly read Retro Gamer because whenever they gather about 20 issues or something, they make a DVD with the PDFs of them.
And they sell that.
And it's about £20. So I don't know what that converts to right now. It's a pretty good conversion.
It's probably
to
like
yen,
30
so.
Bucks. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I got to get it shipped to Japan, but it's a lot cheaper than. But each issue would be like $10.
Right. So if there's like 12 a year, then you're definitely saving a lot of money.
So I read them on my iPad. It's not as great of an experience because theirs is a large format magazine too. You know, it's a beautiful layout and things like that, and the multi-page spreads don't look so great on the iPad. But for cost performance, it's a great way to read it. But that's not where I go to get information on new games.
Right, because it's retro gaming.
But yeah, the internet, and I think it's a very viable way because, especially for an adult, because for a kid, you've still got a viable alternative. You got school and like the playground, you know, talking. Oh my gosh, I used to play Final Fantasy IV with some of my friends on the playground. I was such a geek.
Well, yeah. I don't know how the kids interact.
My Boy Scout troop name was my Cub Scout pack name. I think we called ourselves the Dragon Warriors.
Oh, of course.
Oh no! What, we made a rap.
What did the patch for that look like? You rap? Oh, it was the '80s, I suppose.
It was like with Erdrick's armor. Was it Erdrick? Endrick? I don't remember. With Erdrick's armor and Erdrick's sword, I will defeat the Dragon Lord. And it was long. It was like it was probably. Gosh, there were verses. Oh,
that's crazy.
Shame, like retroactive shame. Okay.
that you can't remember, or that you did it at all, because it sounds pretty awesome.
No, I think the shame is that I can remember more than I'd like to.
Oh.
All right. Well, there's our next video.
Right.
Vink recalls embarrassing points from his life. So no Vink was wrong this week, because I didn't really talk much in the last video about games, so...
We got some
great comments. It seems like a lot of people are, and there's kind of a debate about whether it's these tool assisted gameplay videos really count.
Oh yeah, for the speed runs. Yeah, I've seen a few, not realizing they must have been tool assisted. And thinking, oh, it's pretty amazing, but that can't possibly be real. And then, sure enough, they probably weren't. And yeah. I know one of the commenters said that they usually mentioned it firsthand, but that's not how you get hits. Like, as soon as someone sees a warning like that, it's like, oh, I'm not watching this one. Click. Yeah.
Yeah. We should have mentioned that the old man's retelling of video game history wasn't real.
That one's picked up more hits since it first came out. It's now more popular than like episodes 5 and 6, where before it was like the least popular episode of season 1.
Well, what I'm trying to do is mention how bad it is, making people intrigued to see. Yes. Horrible video. Don't watch it.
Never.
Wink.
I think the big mistake was leading in with that fake mail segment. I don't know what I was thinking. Gosh. Well, no, if this commentary on the DVD, if you have the DVD, that explains what we were thinking. So
yes, we shouldn't waste time right now doing it. You should buy the DVD. All right. So anyway,
shameless plug.
So I've been watching a very interesting game video lately.
Ah, what's that?
It's Ouya.
Ouya.
Ouya. It's like Booyah without the B.
Okay.
Have you been following this at all?
Is that the some kind of video game console that everyone's salivating over for some reason I don't understand?
Like, you're right on two things. And salivating over, I'm not sure. Like, I wonder if it's people are actually wanting it as a video game console, or if it's just kind of a curiosity. Well, for those who haven't, go to Kickstarter.com right now, or if you're on the train, just pause the podcast right now. Okay, go there. Okay,
this is America. We don't ride trains here.
Quiet you. Okay. Now go and look for the Ouya video, or if you're at home on your computer, linked in our show notes. Okay, watch it. All right, we'll wait for you.
I'm not actually going to wait.
Wait the whole length of the video. So, okay, now you've watched it. You can see that it's an Android-based open-source gaming platform that's looking to come out at about $100.
Mm-hmm.
Hooks to your TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, HDMI out, probably fairly high resolution, and really, really easy to develop for because it's Android. You know, you can port. Okay, they don't want to say in the video you can port your smartphone games to it, but come on, you can port your smartphone games to it.
You think
so? It's got a controller. It's a little box. It's the artistic design's done by the guy who did the one laptop per child thing.
So I guess they know how to, yeah, I was yeah. wondering about that. Okay.
So I guess they know how to produce hardware at a budget, but not quite the budget they were hoping for. But the Kickstarter wanted like close to $1 million to get these things into production. And I think they're like $5.5 million right now, making it one of the most successful Kickstarter projects so far.
Yeah, now, that's pretty good.
Why haven't I... Like, I have $100. I have $100. Hold on. I have $100 right here. There we go. Okay, it's only $10, but no one could tell. Okay, but I could buy this, but I haven't yet. I'm trying to figure out why exactly that is. I'm a big fan of Kickstarter, but like, I don't know. Doesn't something there strike you as okay? Let's talk a little more about the specifics. It's a system. It's got the Tegra 3 processor in it, which I guess would make it equivalent to a iPad 2. Oh man, Vink was wrong, but I think probably more like to a Galaxy class Android phone.
Okay.
Okay. And
you mean the Galaxy that got an injunction served against it by Apple for being too similar to the iPhone and iPad?
Yeah, but that doesn't have nothing to do with the graphics processor, I don't think.
Okay.
This could be a very Vink was wrong episode. Okay, but it's got a very small amount of internal memory, you know, for saving things. They're hoping that you put in an SD card, which makes sense. I mean, SD is slow, but like it's cheap. And it's got HDMI out, so you need to hook it to your television because it has no display of its own. Now, what they say in a lot of the comments, people are like, how can they possibly release this thing for so cheap? Well, one of the things is one of the most expensive things on a smartphone is the screen. Another expensive thing is getting everything into a small, tight space without things melting down. Right. And, you know, but when you have a larger box to work with, you don't have to worry about some of those things.
Well, this is what's confusing me, right? Like if I bought a processor and I bought a, well, I guess a hard drive doesn't count here, but a processor and a video card and a sound card, that would cost me more than $100 for off-the-shelf consumer parts.
Well, the thing is for like mobile stuff, like, you know, the processor is not usually even, I mean, it's compared to a computer processor quite cheap. Like, for example, the processor that powers your iPhone 4, that's the A4 processor, the cost per processor is about $17, something like that.
If you're like buying it for original hardware manufacturer, not like a consumer end, right? Or no?
I'm not sure, because when they do the breakdowns of it, they say that like an iPhone 4S, all the parts in it are about like, I don't know, $200.
Okay.
Okay. But they sell it for like $600, you know?
Right.
But Apple, you know, they have to do a lot of custom stuff to get everything into, because they're really on the slim form factor, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, you know, there's because it costs money to do all the tooling, you know, to put it together into one device, and you got to subsidize the design. And so I guess if they have like $5.5 million plus whatever they're going to end up getting, because they didn't ask for that much. They only asked for
$900,000.
Yeah. So they're subsidizing their research and development costs and all of that. That would make it be more expensive. But it's like me. I think they're also trying to sell an idea that is something I don't really feel terribly oppressed by, which is like licensing agreements and the hard lock that other console makers have on their OSs. So, you know, like if you mod your Xbox 360, then and you log on to Xbox Live, then Microsoft will ban you for life, kind of thing. Like, yep, that won't happen with this because it's open source platform.
They encourage Android hacking it. Yeah.
Yeah, like they say in the Kickstarter video, like you should do whatever you want with it, essentially. So since it's not licensing, and they're just making money off the sale of the box itself, how do they make any money? And what's to stop someone else from getting the same idea and pushing them out of the market?
Well, that's the thing. We could flood the market with these open source consoles easily. And I mean, that's definitely a risk. And, you know, until you mentioned it, I never really thought about the licensing part. I was just trying to figure out how they'd make $100, you know, if they'd be able to make it for $100. But as a business model, you can't just make it for $100. Like, I was thinking, you know, if you add up all the parts, it's probably like $90. And then I'm like, wait.
Right.
You know, there has to be a margin sustain, there. Company can't sustain itself on those tiny margins.
But if they have all that seed money, then they can at least for a little while put it out there and it'll exist, and maybe they'll think of something later on. They'll buy them some time, I guess.
It's true. Like, the final product that comes out might cost more, or you know, the cost of these parts will continue to go down. Like, when the smartphones move on to a higher processor, there'll be a surplus of these old ones.
Yep.
Like, for example, the, you know, the most expensive part of, like, you know, a lot of video game consoles when they start out is their main processor. But as they get the, are able to put, you know, bring the die down, you know, so they can produce more on a wafer of silicon or whatever, you know, it gets cheaper and cheaper as, right, as things happen. Like, the PlayStation 3, when it came out, I mean, I heard that it wasn't even profitable, even though they were selling it at $600.
Right.
But now it's selling at, what, $300?
Yeah.
Ish?
Well, they took out other things, too, like the backwards compatibility hardware.
True, true.
And the software is even gone now. There's fewer USB ports. They've done all kinds of things to the hardware since the original version.
But still, they've found a way to make it profitable now, the hardware itself.
Right.
So, I mean, it is possible. But yeah, maybe most of the profit from a company, though, comes from the licensing.
Sure.
I mean, Nintendo's always made profit on hardware, but I mean, and they don't really need necessarily because they do so many first-party titles, but a company like Microsoft, they rely on those licenses to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. For Microsoft to enter the market with a console, they paid $4 billion.
Yeah. So the fact that these guys are breaking in with $5 million.
The thing is, like, if it really is a game changer, you know, if it totally is like this open source revolution that's happening, I mean, maybe, but like everything that we've learned about video games would have to fundamentally change. And you know what? The other companies are going to be pissed.
Well, maybe. I mean, they had to be successful for them to feel threatened, or at least have the feelings justified. Because we've mentioned this before about like the difference between a product and a platform.
That's true. Yeah.
And this is from the whole Google Plus employee and his rant about Google. And him explaining that, like, you know, like Facebook's a platform, but its killer app is, you know, the Facebook photo sharing and tagging, or, you know, Nintendo is able to make their killer apps that show off their hardware, you know, so there's always like a Mario game or a Zelda game or Smash Brothers kart racing, whatever, that shows off the capabilities and people buy it in droves, and Nintendo makes all this money and none of the third parties do, you know, Apple, of course. So
yeah.
So you have to make a name for yourself, and you have to show somebody, like, you know, you can't just release the hardware and hope somebody somewhere someone is going to demonstrate what it's what's good about it. It'll so otherwise it gets released, it'll be like an underground cult classic and nobody will care in the wider market. It won't really affect anything. So they, as far as I know, they don't have that. They don't have a game that they're going to release for it that's going to really show people what it can do.
Well, they've got an exclusive title, one so far.
Oh, really? Is it being maybe
it's
like
called Human Element?
Okay.
Human Element? I think. Oh, man, this is going to be such a
Vink
bad
was episode. Wrong.
Vink was wrong. But they it was in Update 4 they announced it. And like companies like the guy who made Minecraft said is if they sell enough of them, they'll port Minecraft to it. But like it's easy to port to because it's Android.
Right.
So like any game that's on, you know, a smartphone right now, especially something programmed in like the Unity engine, you know, it's not a hard step to just make a screen, you know, a television resolution size thing and add option for using an external controller rather than touchscreen. I mean, some games won't work, but like, you know, you could probably port Angry Birds in an afternoon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. That's maybe like each system that is sold is also a dev kit.
Right. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So they're losing money that way because normally console developers get a lot of money for their dev kits.
So I don't know. Like if it's an altruistic program, like I'm thought
it
of
sounds
the one
like it.
Laptop
yeah.
per child project, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that was not meant to go, ah, how much money can we make off these right. off these starving Ethiopian right. kids? No, right. it was, you know.
Well, they still have to be able to cover the cost, cover, you know, the employees that work on this exactly. indefinitely into the future. So they have to survive.
I think one of the most expensive components must be the controller because, yeah. like, they said that if you want a second controller, add $30.
It's like $30, like, yeah. Which is still pretty it's cheaper than the other current generation controllers that are out there.
I know. So, okay, let's assume that this is not a scam. I think that's the first thing we should assume.
Although this isn't like the Phantom that was, you know, aptly named.
Although with Kickstarter, you never know. You know, there's been scams on Kickstarter. People have taken the money and run. There was this girl who made this board game. That I was following this thread of, and one day she posted and she said that she couldn't continue making it because the son, which was the basis of her game, was angry at her and told her to stop.
Wow.
Like, I think the line between genius and insane is really narrow. You know? So I mean, you gotta be careful. The only Kickstarter programs that you really should fund are the ones that we do.
What?
Nothing.
Oh, I didn't hear
spoilers.
That.
Anyway.
Interesting.
So, but okay, let's say it isn't a scam, and you know, everything's pretty well produced, but. Like, I don't think they're trying to scam anyone. I really don't. Yeah. But I'm just worried that when they get to the machining process, they're going to go, oh, it actually costs a bit more than $100 to make each of these after we pay right. salary to everybody right. and, you know, the cost of ship. You know, they might find that, oh, unforeseen expenses. And, you know, Kickstarter, once it's done, they can't really ask you for more money. So, you know, I don't know. Physical products are difficult, especially when they're charging a really reasonable price. I mean, this is a console for $99 that looks much better than the Wii. I don't know. The demonstrations that they showed, I was thinking like iPad 2 level.
Sure.
Maybe iPad 1 level. Well, either way, both of those could run Infinity Blade, which is amazing looking, and I'd play that on a TV.
Sure.
And this would be amazing for indie developers. You know, the big boys would shy away from it because, you know, well, their model, did you hear that? Everything's free to play.
Right. So,
To play.
I have two questions then.
Yeah, go ahead.
Like, what's the storage medium?
SD cards.
Okay. So you can't have a third-party developer making like a DVD that you can put into this thing because it won't take DVDs.
No, it's pretty much the same distribution model as iPad or, you know, iPhone.
Is there a game store?
Yeah, it's going to be run right through the hardware itself. And that's the thing, though. Like, and maybe this is something they haven't mentioned because they're trying to go for the altruistic thing, but do they take a cut? Like, the games are free. The games are free to play, at least the first few levels, but some of them, like, will have freemiums in, like, you know. Paid upgrades,
but if you can hack it,
okay. You're getting ahead of my train of thought, but yes, exactly. Also, how fun is it going to be to play an online leaderboard based system where everyone can hack the system?
Right, right. I mean, you know, like, you can be as mad as you want about the DRM and other controls that Microsoft and PlayStation, Nintendo have on their things, but it's to ensure equity in the system. And it does cost a lot of money for them to maintain that equity, but they're doing it, you know, to keep the value of the gaming experience at a high level and not just, you know, diminish it into like the Sims Online turned into like a virtual brothel eventually. This is what happens when you just let people do what they want.
I've played very few online competitive games because, as I said, I don't like first person shooters. But like when Nintendo DS came out, I was excited. I was going to play Mario Kart. You know, simpler game, a lot of kids playing. You know, thought. But I played it maybe 5-10 times and just unrealistic. I was in a race and the race was done in like 15 seconds.
Wow.
Like, someone was obviously using some form of a hack, you know, an R4 card or something. And I was just like, I was just completely unfun. And I played Tetris as well with someone. And, like, the game started and it was over right there. Mm. And it wasn't because of any skill that a human being could do.
Right.
It was, you know, like, he hadn't even put any pieces down yet and I was already getting blocks thrown at me.
Mm.
Unless he's just really good. But, like, it didn't seem to follow the normal rules of the game.
Right.
And it's experiences like that that made, unfortunately for me, like, I'm outside of being able to do a lot of, like, local play, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Friends List Friends List is not a good idea. But, you know, I mean, but having, you know, a Friends List, more like how Microsoft does it with Nintendo,
right.
though.
Right.
I think is a good thing because you can play with people whose Mario Kart game avatar isn't genitalia.
Oh dear! All right. So we've established that there's going to be leaderboards, but they can be hacked. That there's not going to be any kind of disc-based media. So what's going to entice third parties to want to develop for this system? That people can basically just steal their stuff if they do release it, and even if that weren't a factor, they have to release it through this store so it's downloadable and small enough, and or on SD cards, which again can be like overwritten, copied, etc.
Well, I mean, I think it's an entirely internet, you know, distribution way. But the thing is, since it's an Android system and it can be so easily hacked, there's no necessity to go through their store if you don't want to. Pretty much anything can be sideloaded. I mean, you can do that with an iPhone too if you jailbreak it, or, you know, you can root most Android phones. And, you know,
right.
if you want to get around paying for things, it's pretty easy to do, you know, on an open system. And that's the thing. I think the base that's going to buy this game system is hardcore enough to know how to do that.
Mm.
Unless they can start getting this into stores and have it as, like, a cheaper console to compete with the Wii. You know, if it's just right. if it's just these gamers buying it, I just don't know. But that's
what's
the thing.
What's
maybe,
the Wii down to? Isn't the Wii like $100 now too? After they took out all the GameCube components?
I don't think so. I think it's still $150.
Is it? All right.
Vink was wrong. Okay,
I'm looking that up right now.
I don't. Do you want one? I kind of want one.
Well, I want. I don't want. Okay. The controller looks nice.
It does.
You know, I only want one if there's games in there that I want to play.
But the thing is, I think, like, I think there'll be a lot of games to play. Like, a lot of games. Like, I think indie developers they're all going to port their stuff to it because it's so easy to do.
Right, but like, what if I can get it somewhere else already? Like what are they going to have that I... Okay, so one thing that kind of bugged me, actually, about their Kickstarter was they were talking about their passion for gaming on the television. Like, it was this thing that was dying. Or, like, they were trying to appeal to PC gamers, specifically. And I'm a console gamer right now, and I played the majority of my games on a TV. So this isn't really a novelty for me. It wasn't really sold on that angle. Like, you know, I pay a lot of money for it. But I do it, and I'm more restricted by time than my wallet right now.
It's true. Like, $60 games don't faze me right now because I only buy a few games a year, and the games that I don't pay, you know, the games that I don't play on the TV, I play on my iPhone, which are like 99-cent games, you know.
Right.
Oh, I've been playing a lot. Oh, thanks to everyone who added me on Game Center, by the way.
Yeah, same here. I friended everyone who asked for it, so.
Yeah, I got maybe 8 ads. I mean, it's not a lot, but I know not everybody's on iPhones here.
Right.
So I'm also on OpenFaint as Famicom Dojo. So Android people, you can add me too.
So OpenFaint's the Android version?
No, it's a cross-platform one. A lot of games support both. It's got kind of the green logo with the little leaves in it.
Oh, okay.
You've probably seen it on an app or so.
Possibly.
Sorry, I claimed Famicom Dojo. One word. but yeah, so you feel free to add me on that. I don't use it as much, but you can be part of the party. So Yeah, you make a valid point. If I bought a Bluetooth controller for my iPhone and an HDMI cable, those two things together would cost me about $50.
Sure.
And it would be pretty much the same thing.
More or less. I mean,
it would be me being able to play games with you know, full HD resolution on my television with a controller.
Sure.
But I don't know. I kind of still want one.
I'm not convinced because their whole freedom thing doesn't appeal to me because I don't feel restricted by the current gaming climate. There are some people who do, but I feel like this is like a 10%er. Like there will be a really hardcore rabid fan base for it, kind of like our show, and no one else will care.
Ouch. Okay, well, look at it. Well, one thing that I thought was kind of disingenuous about the campaign was one of the things she mentioned, and it originally appealed to me. She said, back in the day, you used to be able to take an Apple II computer, code a program, and put it to market. And I'm like, yeah, that was awesome. And then I'm like, but most of the games released for Apple II were like Electronic Arts and stuff, you know?
Right.
And also, how is that any different from today?
Right.
Like, you could put a game to market if you finished coding one.
Yeah, it's not hard to make an iPhone. I mean, okay. It's you have to know how to program to make an iPhone game, but like the barriers to entry are pretty low. You have to go through Apple's approval process. So that's just a quality standard. It's not like a content standard. And then it's like $100 a year to be part of that. And then you can make an iPhone game. The problem isn't the restrictiveness of the market. It's visibility. It's the fact that everyone can do it. So it's flooded with a bunch of either samey stuff or it's just not, it's just really difficult to get your name out there and like get above the pack. And there are different areas that you could go to make more money, like Xbox Live Arcade, WiiWare. Like those venues tend to have a better success rate, even though you know you won't have like stratospheric profits. You can at least get, but like you know iPhone, it's like a quantum leap. Like you will have like no sales or like a gajillion sales, and there's like a very little in between.
With WiiWare, the one you brought up, WiiWare has a bit of a barrier to entry. Things have to be approved. Xbox Live Arcade's a little easier, but I mean you could also just put it up on your website and go, or you could burn it to a CDR and sell it. You know, it's not like an indie developer doesn't have means for getting their game out.
Right.
I guess the only thing that's different is this is a enhanced and easier medium for someone to get their game to be able to be played on a TV. But that seems a bit niche.
Right. Like this. Okay, you know what this sounds like? This sounds like the Steam box we were waiting for.
It's, you know, when I originally heard about the campaign, I thought, oh, is this the Steam box? Oh, it's something.
But, I mean, even though it's not through Steam, it's kind of the same idea, essentially, kind of.
Kind of, except Steam has a really good business model. I mean, they sell things, you know, and they've got a lot of support. But who knows? Maybe they will make the structure they need to sell the games on this. And maybe, like Apple takes a 30% cut off everything. And Google Play takes, I don't know, probably similar. Think was wrong. Okay. But
speaking of Steam, so we got another donation for our podcast DLC.
Oh my gosh, this was totally out of the blue. Yeah. Considering we've been done with that podcast for like a month now.
Yeah, but it's like totally crazy. So I'm trying to bring up the email right now. I thought I marked this as unread so I would have it ready for the show, and then it's apparently not marked that way. Oh, there we go. Got it.
Michael Zander.
Yeah. So Michael Zander wrote in and mentioned about the Steam summer sale going on, and kind of like just from listening to our show and talking about all these games that we just like buy and never play, he thought that his money would be better served going to us.
Yeah, he says he listens to the podcast every week, and instead of adding another game to the queue that he's never going to play, he donated. Yeah, he sent us a few bucks, and you know, Thank you. I mean, that's really nice. I don't know. I don't know. For $5 you get Portal, though. I don't think we're worth Portal. We don't even have a desk. But I mean, flattered. Totally flattered. You know,
That's really cool. I like that.
I hate to ask for money because especially like a donation, because I mean, I like what we do, and it would very much help us if people gave some money. But like, you know, I used to always be annoyed by those pledge drives and things like that. And I don't want to be that type of thing. But you know what? If we could put a little kind of inconspicuous link on the bottom of our page for if people do want to donate, that might be okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm not against that. But maybe we should hold off on asking for donations for a little bit.
I think so.
Just a little bit.
But I mean, thanks a lot. We appreciate that, and I don't know, like. Maybe that's the future of gaming.
Yeah, like,
you know, I've been seeing these amazing apps. I don't know if you've seen this, but some of them, they're totally free games. They come out, they've got no ads, but they have not DLC, I don't know, an in-app purchase that says, it just says, send the developer $1.
Yeah.
And you click it, and, you know, well, it's actually more like, I don't know, 70 cents, because Apple takes 30 cents, you know, but...
Right.
But, like... The game is totally free, and it's just like charityware. I don't know what you'd call it exactly.
It's, well, you know, it's like the shareware model, kind of,
but like shareware, like, guilted you. They're like,
right, that's
if
true.
You don't buy this, you're just like pirating it, you know.
Right.
But like this one is more like, so you like it? You want us to do more? Why don't you send us $1?
Yeah. It's
interesting.
It's true. Well, you know, so like I think of the Ouya, and it appeals to me on the level that it's starting as a Kickstarter campaign for one thing, and Kickstarter is just the super cool thing, and it's a way to get a regular person to invest in something, and they get something for it, rather than, you know, I'm suspicious of the giant corporate model of investment. You know, you get a share and you expect to get your money back. And yeah. This is like a consumer level way of doing investment. It's like, you know, you give us this much, we'll give you a bunch of cool stuff at cost, essentially, for what your contribution was worth, and then we get a little money for ourselves to get this thing going. And I guess the difference here is that this is a platform versus a product, again, like Allo's Kickstarter or Double Fine. They're trying to create a commercial product that they're going to sell. They're going to get all the profits, and this is going to reduce their profit margin, but also ensure that it gets made in the first place, because you know, the typical model for making a game is you go to a publisher to bankroll it while you're making it, and then things can happen that make sure it never sees the light of day, or even if it does get released, then the developers don't really see a lot of the benefit from that, besides what they were paid to develop it in the first place, and then the publisher gets all the money. And this is a nice way around that, but it's still, you know, you're feeding the commercial beast. And this, they are trying to appeal to like hackers. People don't want to pay for their content. You know, that there's no bones about that, I don't think. But it could also be a good medium for indie developers, as long as they don't mind their stuff being stolen and hacked. Like they're encouraging people to do.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess
there's a bit of a conflict of interest there, but there it's like they're trying to take it in this direction that it, and it maybe it feels like the stuff kind of wants to go, but on the other hand, I think Kickstarter really is more for funding commercial projects.
It's a utopian type thing. I mean, it's really.
Well,
it's just this is freedom. Let's do this. We just. And one of the main things that people bring up against Kickstarter is essentially they are paying for – basically they're just paying for a pre-order of a product that doesn't exist yet. Mm. And I mean that's true, but like if the product's something you like when the product was, you know, $20 for a new Space Quest game – or a game by Tim Schafer that I would have bought anyway, you know, if it's a new game by Tim Schafer, helping to support the project makes me feel, you know, kind of good about it, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, we'll see. But you bring it up again. It's a platform. It's there's a commitment after the sale.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Yeah, they got to support it, even if they sell it. And I wonder where the money for that's coming from too.
Because like Tim Schafer, he makes his game, and I play it. And maybe I like it. Maybe I don't. But you know, it's what was expected. But like this is a console that's going up that they say is going to have a future, a life. I don't know though. Can a company based on, I think it's a very goodwill idea. I mean, I don't think they're trying to do anything evil at all. But
no,
can they really go up against the big three with that? I mean,
I don't think it's going to be a game changer. It's interesting and people are going to want to support it and see what it can do. But you know, there's something to be said about the existing business model. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry that's like starting to dwarf the film industry.
The iPhone came in and it was a game changer.
Oh yeah.
And then of course Android, added to that market as well.
But you know, it's Apple. They're like the most, you know, iron-fisted company out there, and they're making money hand over fist over iron fist.
It's a good point. I don't know, like the free spirit in me inside goes, this is an awesome idea, I want to support this. But like the part that's been listening to economics podcasts lately, gosh, why did that happen? has major reservations about this platform. But I don't know. I don't know which side's going to win out in the end. Like the Kickstarter's ending in like, I don't know, 20 days. Or by the time this podcast goes out, like, I don't know, 15 days. And I know comments.
Yeah,
I want to hear what other gamers have to think about it, because that's the thing. Like, I'm coming in thinking about the money and thinking about the development and thinking about that, but maybe I should be maybe I'm overthinking this. So if you guys can watch the video, take a look at it, and let's have a lively discussion about this. Is this worth putting money into, and if so, why? Or And I suppose the bigger question is, I mean, I think it'll get made. I don't really have any thoughts that it's not going to, but like, is it going to be the game changer that the company hopes it's going to be?
Yep.
So I'm very interested to see. You know, lately the comments have been really good. We've had some discussions going on.
Well, they've never been bad. Like, I've always enjoyed the comments, but there have been a lot more of them the last few weeks than there have, and I really, really like that.
Yeah, it gives me something fun to look forward to. Like, oh, someone's responded to one of my comments. That's that's great. I know it's, wow, that kind of sounds sad. Actually, I feel like the Facebook kid from the South Park episode.
Oh,
sitting at his computer waiting for a like. But it's really like that. Last night I posted something to Facebook. I posted this weird thing about these kind of racy looking pillows that were in a UFO catcher game. Yeah. If you want to see that, go to our Facebook page.
Oh, it's so funny.
And I posted it, and I don't know why, but I was just sitting there hitting refresh, wondering if anybody noticed it.
Oh, yeah.
And then the first comment was like, why don't you make any more Famicom Dojo videos? And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. Like, almost immediately preceding post was like the promo for the Neo Geo thing.
I know, but
like, what? I mean, like, did he not watch it?
Well, we watch it a million times, but I think our general fan is just waiting for the big stuff to come.
So that's something else that we're going to do is it's going to be a little different for the next month, and we can't really comment on the Neo Geo episode because we're recording this before it goes up, so we can't talk about the feedback we're getting from it until next week. But like going forward, what I'm going to try and do is for our big episodes, I'm going to release the promo the week before on the Powit.tv YouTube channel. And, people have been talking about it in the comments, and I'm hoping to generate some buzz, you know, like usually we don't say anything about what goes up until it happens. And now I want to try and do some actual previews, because we always do those joke previews, like Arrested Development. And
the next Famicom Dojo.
Those are fun. But
I love that, but it doesn't really tell anybody what's coming next. Although, a video from 2007 has proved to actually be predicting an episode coming up.
Yeah, event finally. Well, you know what? I think we just skipped a season, right? Like it was gonna be like episode 3 of season 1, and now it's just episode 3
something
of season
like
2. So, you know,
well,
just
there you go.
We were just off a little bit. So,
but regardless, we love the feedback we've been
yes.
getting. Oh, and nothing major, no full episodes, but I'm going to be doing occasional little videos about Japanese game culture or interesting finds from game stores and stuff, and I'm going to be putting those up exclusively to our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not a subscriber to that already and you want to get everything we do, just add a like and you'll be notified when we put that new stuff up. But nothing big if you're one of those very anti Facebook pages, and in a way I kind of am. But anti Facebook people, anti Facebook pages. What am I talking about? Okay, anyway.
The people have been great. The people who comment on our page are wonderful.
Yep. So but you know, just another little thing that I'm doing, mostly recorded like from my iPhone when I find something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I've recorded a couple of those. We'll have them going up on the Facebook page. We've got our Onslaught beginning. By the time you hear this, it'll be in full swing.
Yep. And then we'll have a new video. New stuff all next month, and then new formats. Just. Man, we're launching like two different kinds of formats for the show now, and I really hope that people like them. They'll be easier to do for one thing, both of them,
yes.
and we can do them more often, and we don't have to wait for these like huge roll ups of episodes to get them done, because we like the big episodes and the stories and the history and stuff like that. But
and don't worry, we're going to continue to do those. We've got one in production right now.
Yeah, but they're like 14 minutes long to watch and much longer to create. And we only did two of them last year, and like three of them the year before. No, four of them the year before. And I guess when we're done with this year, well, we're going to have more than that this year by the time we're done with this Onslaught. But you know, that people want to see stuff more often than that, and we really want to deliver, and because people keep asking for it. Like, every time I put up a Palette Game News or Keep Playing or whatever, it's like, where's Famicom Dojo? Okay. Let's do it. So, we have a Facebook page, Famicom Dojo. We've got Twitter, Famicom Dojo. Our YouTube channel is That's Orange. What else? Oh, yeah, we are on Stitcher Streaming Radio for free. Free iTunes storefront to download the podcast, of course. And check out those promos at the Powit.tv YouTube channel.
And soon.
And soon, Zoom. Zoom, Zoom, Zoom. Zoom.
I'm gonna keep mentioning it until it's true.
Yeah. Maybe, you know what? I'm not even going to find out if it's true, because I remember setting up a Zoom account for something. It might have been the Powitcast. Might have been when this, because this feed used to be our video netcast, right? And that's the other thing too, is that if you are subscribed to this, you're getting promos the week that the videos are coming up in this feed. And because of the way that iOS changed how the iPod application works, is like a music and a video one now, you're not seeing the videos in the music version. So if you look at the video version of this feed on your iPhone or iPad or whatever, you might see a bunch of videos you haven't seen before that maybe you should
really
watch. Yeah.
I didn't know.
See, even you didn't know that. Yeah. So by the time this podcast comes up, immediately preceding this episode, 56, will be the Neo Geo promo, but it's going to go up on the Powit.tv YouTube channel the week before that. But I want to make sure that, like,
this is the future now. Yeah. You've already seen the full episode.
Yes.
So hope you liked
so
that.
So confusing. But yeah, if for some reason you subscribe to the podcast and don't watch the videos, then this will be a window into you watching the videos. What we really need to do, though, is get people watching the videos to listen to the podcast, I think is the way it should be going.
Mm.
We do mention it in the new video. We do.
I don't know. I kind of like our closed group of podcast listeners right now.
Yeah, they are pretty cool.
Makes me feel connected. Okay, that's what I want to end on. You guys have been awesome. Recently, we've been getting feedback on our Facebook. We've been getting feedback through the threads. We've been getting voicemails every week. We've been getting personal emails. We've been getting money from people.
Right.
I mean, all of this stuff is so encouraging. And if you feel like you don't really have anything important to say, and so you've been holding off on sending us a comment or writing an email, don't do that. Everything's appreciated, and everything spurs us to keep doing this. We enjoy doing it in ourselves, but we're hungry for fame. Hungry for fame.
and we may need your help relatively soon with something, so we'll keep you guys posted.
All right.
I'm just saying.
I think that's all I got this week.
All right. So, yeah, enjoy the onslaught. Enjoy the video coming next week, which, let's not even tease it. Let's just surprise everyone. And we'll be talking about the feedback to the Neo Geo episode on the next episode, 57. Oh, that's so confusing. Anyway, until next week, the dojo is
cool. Awesome.
Releasing new videos.
Air conditioned.
The dojo's open. It's open. It's open for the next couple months. How about that?
Awesome.
Babacom Dojo.